Do you think the world is getting better or worse? Unsurprisingly, a huge majority of people today believe the world is getting worse. Maybe this global pessimism is the result of a culture bathed in bad news, or maybe we inherently know the earth-shaking truth presented at the heart of this book. Something is deeply wrong with our planet, and we are powerless to fix it. The great controversy not only unveils the origin of human degradation, but also discloses the titanic struggle raging below the din of pandemics and peril, corruption and carnage, murder and mayhem. In this astonishing work, you will discover that evil has a face, good has a champion, and sin has an end. If you want to prepare for the end of this world and the glorious world to come, you must read this book. Join the campaign to distribute millions of copies of The Great Controversy by Ellen G. White to people in and around your communities. Contact your local church for more information or text us at +27 73 470 3520. Adventist World Radio, SID Media, from broadcast to baptism.
Good evening to you, and welcome to the Wednesday edition of Business Sense right here on Adventist World Radio. We are, of course, powered by SID Media. You do know that every single Wednesday, we do this thing called Entrepreneurship and Small Business. This is where, of course, we speak to some of the leading entrepreneurs in the African continent. I must say that if you are an entrepreneur yourself and you'd like to be featured on this show, well, it's simple. What you can do is send us your profile to +27 73 470 3520. That is +27 73 470 3520. And who knows, you might just be on the show on this side of course, AWR SID Media. And today, it is a Wednesday, and in no difference, we are speaking to Mr. Richard, who is Chirwa. And Mr. Richard Chirwa will be telling us a little bit about his business. For those of you who are entrepreneurs wondering, well, how is this entrepreneurial journey? Difficult? Easy? What do you do? He is here to tell us a little bit about the lessons that he has learned. And he's joining us on the line. Good evening, sir.
Good evening. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you so much for asking. And how are you?
I'm great, thanks.
And your day so far?
The day has been very good. Actually, it's close of business now, so it's been a good one.
Fantastic.
How has it been that side?
Well, it's been okay. I think we are now nearing spring, so it's becoming a lot less cold, which is, of course, thank God, because me and winter are not best of buddies, eh?
Yeah, I think it's the same here in Malawi, because now it's getting warm.
Oh, it's getting warm, right? Sure. Yes. Yeah, we are averaging around 20, late 20s Celsius, that side.
Yeah, I think it should be around the same.
Yeah.
I think the same here as well.
Fantastic.
Maybe 19 degrees Celsius, 18 thereabouts.
Ooh, that's a little bit cold though, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But anyways, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Sure.
Really appreciate it. As we mentioned to our listeners, if you do want to get involved, it is +27 73 470 3520. Let's start here, Mr. Chirwa. Tell us a little bit about yourself, and maybe how did you get into this business, Fadet Furniture?
Yes, actually, let me just start with the name itself.
Yes, okay.
Yeah, because it's pronounced as Fadet.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah, it comes from the old English word of fades.
Fades. Okay.
So,
okay.
Yeah. So it's pronounced as fade.
Okay.
And it's from one of the biblical verses which says flower fadeth.
Look at that.
But the word of God endures forever.
Oh, so look at that.
That's where the word comes from.
Oh.
So fadeth finishes, but But you're not the only one that pronounces that as Fadet.
Okay.
Almost 80% of my customers here also pronounce it as Fadet.
I think you should just now pronounce it like that. But anyways, that's an interesting background.
No, so we accept either way.
Pronounce
it as Fadet, Fadet. It's all right.
Ah, that's an interesting background.
Sure.
All right.
So I'm the founder of the business. Initially, when it was starting, we started as a landscape and a florist business.
Okay.
And then we diversified to interior designing, furniture fittings, and now we also have a properties business.
Yeah.
So we have evolved over the years.
Yeah.
We have three sections of actually they've been registered as separate legal entities.
Yes.
Now.
Yes.
Yeah. So the first one is still there. Then the furniture and fittings one has been registered separately, and now the property is where we develop and sell property.
Ah, fantastic.
Yeah,
so it's three separate legal entities,
yeah,
but in a way they do connect with each other, right?
Yes. Yeah, so we have Fadith, the very first one, then we've got the Fadith Furnishers, and then we've got Fadith Properties.
Look at that, right?
Yeah. They're actually connected, yes.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for the first one, I don't think we would have had the second one.
Yes.
And if it wasn't for the second one, wouldn't have had it was actually the demand from the customers that was leading us to the direction of our diversification.
Yes.
Because you go and you're working on pieces of wood as in pieces of furniture in a home, and then the client is saying, but if you can do this piece, you should be able to do this cabinet.
Yes.
If you can do this cabinet, you should be able to do this column.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. So how did you get into this type of business? Where did you have an interest from?
We were doing now 30% of a construction structure.
Mm.
Why don't we just try the remaining 70? That's how we ended up with the third business. So we're pretty much into construction now as well.
Yes. Oh, fantastic. I was asking, what brought you into the furniture business? Did you love it, or what was the reason for you to get into it?
Well, for about the furniture business, it was, like I said, we're being led by the need and the gap. So by the time I was venturing into the furniture business, I was already doing the landscape one. But then at this point here in Malawi, we did not have established manufacturers who modern furniture. So this was a time when most of the Malawians who had a taste for this type of furniture were just importing.
Yes.
So there was this big gap where for people to import, I'm sure with South Africa it's very different, but for Malawi, for you to import something, it's quite challenging when it comes to forex, when it comes to freight. So the period it takes is very long, and when you import that item, the after service is not there, because I mean if you've imported something from China, you've brought it to Malawi and it has a problem. You don't know where to take
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
So there was this big gap that was there. The demand was huge for such products. That's when we thought we should come in and fill in that gap.
Ah, fantastic. Like they say, all entrepreneurs are there to solve a problem, fill a gap, as it were. And it sounds like that's exactly what you do.
Exactly. Actually, that's what business should be.
Yes.
Because business is about answering a problem.
A problem that exists. Okay. And what would you say then makes a Fadet furniture different from any other furniture manufacturing company out there, especially in Malawi?
Well, at the time of our onset, we were pretty much the pioneers of contemporary furniture.
Okay.
So we stood out, and we were very unique. In terms of the standard and the quality of the products and the services. So that's what made our brand unique. We were like we're like a solution to a problem that people were have been looking forward to for a long time. So that is, I think, what I can say makes us unique.
Unique
But
from
with the passing of time, we must say there's been a big boom in the furniture business. To the extent that we I mean, there are competitors as well that have taken the same direction. But since we were like first in that direction, it gave us a big advantage.
Yes,
It gave us a
first
big
mover
advantage,
advantage.
not only in the market share as first entries, but also with time, the experience that we have gained is obviously better than the experience that the newcomers have.
So it's that first mover advantage thing. Fantastic. All right, when did the business start?
So we started in 20 okay, now the very first one was 2009. Then by 2012 we had registered the second business.
All right.
So
All right.
all these businesses are registered in my name, but I'm still saying we because the my if you look at my background, I hold a Bachelor of Science degree in statistics. I never did anything in technical works, but I've done a lot of on-the-job training and a lot of training in the area while I had already started the business. So you can see that most of the progress made has been pretty much as a result of teamwork. So as much as I was the founder, but there has been a lot of contribution from different people who are still there, and some have maybe moved on to other ventures.
Yeah, that's true. I suppose the saying that it takes a village can also be applied in your business as well, to say it took a village for you to be where you are and run the kind of business that you're running. Love that. I love that. Now, you said something about the furniture market booming. How did you deal with 2020 and COVID and the shutdown?
That was, I think, one of the most challenging times for any business person, not only in Africa, but I think worldwide. So that was also, we were not spared. But I must say that I think it took grace for us to sail through that period. We had a lot of, I think, dialogue with because I think the one of the most challenging things that business owners had at that time was to sustain their staff. So we had good agreements with the staff to make sure that at the end of the day we survive through the period.
And for
So
someone,
I think that understanding that we had with our staff is also one of the contributing factors that helped us sail through the difficult time of that COVID.
Yeah, definitely. I wanted to actually ask you there, for, I suppose, emerging small businesses that maybe don't have the experience that you have now, the importance of being transparent with your employees. How important is that as an entrepreneur?
Well, that's a very difficult one, because as much as you have to be very, very transparent, but you also have to be very careful with sharing information and information has to be shared well to everyone,
yeah.
But I think it has to be done very strategically.
Strategically, eh?
Because people respond to certain things differently.
Mm.
So you have to know your stuff.
Mm.
You can say the same thing, but in a very different way. And at the end of the day, the response is what matters.
Yeah, definitely.
So it's very important to be transparent with the staff, but the communication skills are vital when it comes to communicating with your staff. Mm. Areas like salaries.
Yeah.
My staff know the wage bill.
Okay.
For the company.
Okay.
But you have to be very careful not to disclose information that might be private and confidential for other staff in the same organization.
Yes. Yes.
So someone is going to come to you and say, no, but I think my contribution is the same as this one. I want to know how much this one is getting.
Mm.
So that's where you have to draw the line and say, no, I can tell you how much the company is spending in terms of our wage bill.
Yeah.
But don't go into the details of giving and disclosing information that might be deemed confidential by other staff as
Indeed. Sure. That's beautiful. Now, raising capital, I suppose it's a business that requires quite a bit of capital outlay from the beginning. How did you navigate that?
My business has been quite different.
And, okay.
This is what I always promote when I'm engaging with young entrepreneurs, which I think is not always accepted because the young ones, they always want quick progress.
Yes,
they want fast growth. But
but
with the case of my business, it was purely organic growth.
Mm. Mm.
Organic growth. There was no finance from the bank. There was no finance from the financial institution.
Yeah.
But from the little savings that I had, from the few angel investors that I spoke to, I put that little capital together. I didn't start big. I started with very, very few units.
Yeah.
And from the one unit went to two units, from the two units went to three units, and that's how the business grew.
Oh,
so
fantastic.
that's the same strategy that I promote.
That's really fantastic. I mean, angel investors, a lot of us have not tapped into that market. It seems to be a growing market in Africa as an alternative, I suppose, to your more conventional, traditional funding methods.
Yes, because it gives
How are you finding it?
It gives you a lot of advantages. Here finance is very expensive.
Yeah.
I know we're talking about very different economies.
People
that are listening might be listening from very different countries with different economies.
Yeah.
But for most of the third world countries, the cost of capital is
very high.
Very high.
Yeah.
And if one is not careful, especially for startups, you end up actually drowning your own business by what you deem as capital. Sourcing capital.
Yeah, fantastic. So you said you started with one unit. Do you remember that very first customer without necessarily saying their name or who they are, but do you remember them? How was that experience? I'm sure it must have put a smile on your face.
Well, actually, just a week. It's like you maybe went through our social media platforms, because just a week ago, last week actually, we have just rewarded our very, very first customer who bought the very first sofa set from us, because this is like someone who came. It's a family that came when I mean, not many Malawians had confidence in local excellence.
Yes.
And these people said, no, we trust your work.
Mm.
And they gave us the first payment for the business. And 14 or so years down the line,
sure,
we decided, no, let's reward these guys. And we have just given them a very, very good sofa set for free as a token of appreciation.
Look at that. That's really beautiful. And from there, like you said, social media and all those sort of stuff, back then, how did you build your customer base versus how you do it now?
That's true. These days, it's the dynamics are very different. Because today, I post something with the sponsored ads. It goes viral within minutes.
Yep.
But back then, I think social media was not really as it is
now.
But we did, because looking back on my social media pages, I see that we still have some of the first products on the social media platforms.
Yeah.
So we were still using social media, but to be honest, in my case, the best way of promoting a product is through referrals.
Mm.
Through referrals. So back then, I remember one of my friends asked, you know, what's going to happen to you when all your friends will have bought the things from you? Then who will be buying? Because when we just started, it was my friends, the people that are close to me that were buying.
Yeah.
And this person was concerned. If what's going to happen when all your friends have now bought their furniture?
Yeah.
Who is going to be buying from you? But it is these people that taught the next person, taught the next person.
Sure.
And that's why the product is the first thing for me to focus on when it comes to marketing.
Ah, fantastic. All right. Now, 14 years now, later on, with all the experience, as you look back, I suppose as a statistician, for example, you had to sit down and do a little bit of projections, for example, and say, 5 years from now, this is what we think we'll make. 10 years from now, this is what we think we'll make. But I'm sure what you had on your spreadsheet and what then eventually happened on the ground were two different things. So how did you find reality and projections when you started the business and when it now went through the 14 years today?
It's all, to be honest, it's always like that. The expectations are not always the reality. So for me, passion is very vital when it comes to running a business, especially when you're starting up as an SME.
Yeah.
Because you are going to have serious upsets, and if you're not passionate about the business, you end up giving it up.
Yeah.
There are things that exceeded our expectations.
Mm.
And there are things that were not as we expected.
Yes.
So it's the things that exceeded our expectations that keep propelling and keep motivating us to go on. But to be honest, looking back, I think we have pretty much hit most of our targets.
Yeah.
With a few setbacks here and there, but
okay.
I think we're on the right track.
You are definitely on the right track, and I know that recently you were nominated as part of the award. How did that make you feel?
Sorry?
I know that recently your company was actually nominated.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
I know you didn't get it, but
awards, yes.
Yes. And we are about to wrap up the conversation that we were having with Ferret Furniture there. And what I want to know from you now, Elder, is typically as an entrepreneur, you sound like a busy person. What does your day normally look like? And how has the entrepreneurial journey affected your family life?
First of all, I must say that one of the expectations that people have when they're moving from employment to entrepreneurship is is they think they are going to have more time
yes, yes.
For their personal things.
Yeah.
But that I think once you get into entrepreneurship, you realize you probably maybe had more time when you were employed.
Yeah, okay.
But the advantage is you're still in control
yes.
of your schedule.
Yes.
Yeah. With employment, you have to clock in at 8.
Yeah.
Clock out at and you knock off at 5.
Yeah.
Whether there's something to do or there's nothing to do.
Yeah.
You just have to be there on the desk.
Yeah. Okay.
While with entrepreneurship, I mean it's different. And,
yes.
and that's one thing I think that really pushed me into entrepreneurship. I'm not the routine type.
Okay.
So, yeah. So that's one of the pulling factors I think
yes.
that put me into entrepreneurship. I want to be in control of my schedule,
yes.
make a plan,
yes.
And create time for whatever I'm planning. So yeah, that's the advantage. It's not as people think, but when you do it right, I think especially for people that are result oriented, you realize that it's a much, much better option that way than employment, yeah.
Yeah, and so you do have much more time with family.
Yes, certainly. So the thing is you have to make a plan. You either have a plan for the week, like for example, in my case, I know the one day of the week, the Sabbath you don't touch that one. So you have the weekly plan.
Yeah,
you work from Sunday.
Yeah,
we work from Sunday to Friday.
To Friday, yes.
And you know that Sabbath is strictly for your nuclear family and the church at large, and
yeah.
In the course of the week, from Sunday to Friday, I've got a daughter, so I have to make time for her in terms of school. In terms of assignments, preparation for tests and her examination. So I always make that time. For family, despite the very busy schedule that I have as an entrepreneur. And
sure.
The other challenge with entrepreneurship is you as much as you do have control over your schedule, but you should bear in mind that. You are also there to serve your
yes,
customers who
yes.
Are going to come to you when you least expect
yes,
them.
Yes.
So sometimes you even have people calling you outside working hours.
Sure.
And sometimes you just have to attend to them. So,
yeah.
So there are those challenges when it comes to time management. But there's always time for family.
Okay, and what would you say motivates you as an entrepreneur? What makes you say, I'm not going to go to maybe formal employment? Or what makes you say, every day when you wake up in the morning, I still want to do this?
Well, there's so many things. I think we can start with the control over schedules.
Yeah.
And I'm very passionate about evangelism. And when I was employed, when I had just left college, it was almost impossible for me to be making schedule, like 2 weeks schedules for evangelistic campaigns. While now I can actually make time for such. So that is one. And second thing is, I think what I had already mentioned earlier about being result oriented. I want to see the output be directly proportional to my input. With employment, sometimes, regardless of how much you're putting in, the output is the same.
The output is the same, definitely.
I'll give you an example of the money that you make. It doesn't matter how much you work when you're in employment, but unless you've got some incentives, but if your salary is, say, $1, you're going to get $1 the end of the month.
That's all.
With entrepreneurship, you push yourself and you know, I'm going to be rewarded for this extra mile that I'm going to take. So those are some of the things that I find would keep me in this path than to go back to
employment.
Otherwise, the best motivation is just the satisfaction that you see meeting. For your customers.
Sure, that's beautiful. All right, as we wrap up then, if you were to do things differently and start all over again, what do you think is the one thing you would do in this entrepreneurial journey that you're on?
For me, I'd say it's been a beautiful experience. It's been a very enlightening journey, and I don't think I would
change anything.
Every step, whether up or down, I think has been good for knowledge. It's been good for experience.
Sure.
So I would say there's no perfect path for anyone thinking of venturing into entrepreneurship. The shortfalls that are there, they're good for knowledge. We're where we are now because of some of the things that we probably did not do right. And if I would say I would go back and I wouldn't do it this way, then we probably wouldn't have the knowledge and the experience that we have now.
That's very, very true. Okay, lovely. And where is Faded going 5-10 years from now?
Oh, well, we hope we hope we will not be where we are now.
Yeah.
And then maybe short-term goal would be, I mean, just to make sure that we grow and extend our market share in the country itself, but we've always had a long-term goal of actually extending extending our footprint in the region. We already are in the process of opening in Zambia, so we hope to actually have a significant footprint in the region.
Okay, fantastic. I just want to hear your final thoughts then. There are young people perhaps that are looking up to you that also want to be entrepreneurs. Maybe they see your journey, and there are other people maybe not too near or too far from you, but they see what you are doing. What would be your words of encouragement, and where can people find your services?
First of all, I'd say find us online. It's easier that way. Because once we engage with you online, then we can give you more information. We can share with you our catalogs. We can share with you our product and service profile. And we can also give you direction to our physical establishments. But I must say that we have a lot of customers that deal with us online. So we deliver for Malawi. We deliver across the country. It doesn't matter where you are. Whether it's something that we can send, we deliver. Whether you need a team to come and put up a ceiling or put up a kitchen, we actually send a team wherever you are, as long as you are within the borders of Malawi. I think it would be much, much easier that way than to give our physical addresses. But for people that know Blantyre, our main sales office is in Victoria Avenue.
yeah,
Victoria Avenue opposite National Bank.
Mm.
Mm. Yeah, for the young ones, I would say there's nothing special really with the people that you see in business, successful businesses.
Yeah,
they're just like you.
Yeah,
just need to be determined. The fears will always be there. You need to just take the leap.
Yeah,
and you start. If there's the one, I think I heard someone say, if there's one sure way of failing is by not starting.
Hmm.
So you know definitely you are definitely going to fail, but you plan. I'm not saying you should not. You should take uncalculated risks, but you plan on paper, see all the holes, and you see that it's working on paper. Take the leap, and as you have rightly called me, you said, I think, elder. So as a man of the church,
yes,
I cannot end by without giving one advice from the creed,
which that's is the very Bible, true. Yeah,
which says, unless the Lord build the house,
they labor in vain.
They that build it.
Yeah.
So whatever you do, you can do it right, but if you don't put God first, then you are bound to fail.
Ah, fantastic! Thank you so much, my elder. I really appreciate your time. Beautiful insights.
Thank you so much.
Have a good one. Well, that was our elder there, Elder Chiro, telling us a little bit about his business and how he got to be where he is today, and what is it that I suppose as aspiring entrepreneurs, young people, we can follow also on his footsteps. They're beautiful, beautiful. Thank you so much, Elder, and thanks to you as well for listening.
Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.